chit-chat, unless it's at the diner.
I thought I was. I'm here to plead for the right to move freely. I was told that clan leaders would pass through here, and if I wished to press my case, I could do so, here, on your lands. So yes, I lost control and scared the girl, but I am a transient. I will not stay. You have my word, Philip said.
Who are the leaders? I asked.
I had my suspicions. There are two. I have met neither, but they are only recently come to power. They've killed every mobile vampire on the eastern seaboard of the country and into Canada. At that, my brows shot up. That was a serious power grab. He nodded at my reaction.
Exactly. The only vampires who are still in power are in major cities, where their soldiers protect them. But as you know, my kind are restless. We move about. And that is why so many undead are missing, leaving great chaos behind them. I know you may find this distasteful, but a steady hand, even if it is undead, will control crime in an area. You see the problem with such a vacuum.
Philip shrugged in hopes that I did see the nature of power. When local crime lords were removed, there was a flurry of violence to fill their position. If the control had been in the hands of a vampire, it meant the ensuing struggle would be even more horrific. Vampires can kill far more people than simple thugs. They're built for it.
I considered Philip for a moment, then pointed south.
You'll hunt elsewhere, and allow me to offer you a compromise for your moment of weakness.
He looked warily into my eyes.
Good. He should be worried, no matter how many years he'd been preying on humans. The McEwans aren't sheep, and we don't brook the presence of wolves. I considered my words before speaking, lest there be any wiggle room. Vamps can be crafty, sort of like lawyers with fangs, although vamps don't charge $300 an hour. On second thought, maybe vamps weren't totally bad. I shook my head and focused on the bloodsucker in front of me, leaving thoughts of law firms behind.
Find the identity of the new clan leaders. You have 2 days, I said, my voice casual.
He ran his tongue over the points of his fangs, and I saw him reconsider attacking me.
If I cannot discover these people, what happens?
I smiled, then looked off into the east. A delicate bloom was rising in the thin clouds that hung in the twilight sky.
My gran says I have a rather sunny disposition. Don't make me show you.
Pointing a finger at him, I discharged an invisible gun. At his grave nod, I cut my eyes, indicating he was free to go, but in truth, neither of us were certain of victory if it came to a fight then and there. He knew my thoughts, but chose the better part of valor. With a bow, he turned and walked away, his feet leaving a deep green trail across the silvered dew of the lawn. And for what felt like the first time in memory, I exhaled.
Chapter 14. Cat Herding. I went straight to work, feeling a bit bedraggled but determined. Over the next 2 hours, I let the coffee pot be my spirit animal, and when breakfast reached the peak, I was not only in fine form but reasonably cheerful. Stars and sun, bless the magic contained within the humble coffee bean. Cooking is something that only occupies part of my mind, letting the remainder of my thoughts travel overland to chase down flimsy ideas that always seemed to lead back to Alex. Something about the young man told me he was the tie that bound everything together. There was an event just over the horizon, and the weird circus, dead girl, and roaming undead were woven tightly in a means that I couldn't see. Yet. Alex would help me unravel all of this unsavory activity that left my teeth humming with magical energy. I could feel the potential for great harm, and my witch mark left no doubt as to what our familial opinion was of such an occurrence. The tingle of readiness in my mark was as noticeable as my caffeine buzz. I walked out of the diner, resolved to find Alex, bring him to my gran, and debrief him to the best of our abilities in the least invasive way possible. We hadn't quite reached the whole dungeon and executioner's hood stage, but that didn't mean that gentle persuasion wouldn't be just as effective. My gran's eyes, peering inquisitively over the edge of a teacup, can make most people sing like canaries. She has the gift of letting you know she senses you aren't telling her what she wants to hear. This inquisition arrives with the lift of one single arched brow. It's an art form perfected by teachers, suspicious witches, and small-town judges. I thought of Alex and his quiet, hesitant energy, and smiled. There was something about him that made me feel protective, even upbeat, the exact opposite of what his sister brought out in me. I detest Anna. I don't like the way she sits, or stands, or talks, or eats. And although I've never seen her sleep, I'm pretty sure I'd hate that too. I get mad. I mean, who doesn't? Even the patron saint of keeping your mouth shut would find being around Anna reason enough to fire off an insult or two. Or three. The thing about it is that I really like cats, so it can't be the whole dual nature as a shifter panther, or some other animal quality that sets my teeth on edge. If she was a centipede or a badger, I could see me having that tingling feeling of distrust, but she isn't. She's a big, beautiful cat, live and exotic, and I can't stand it. Have you ever gotten caught up in your thoughts and snapped out of it to find you're someplace completely unexpected? Well, I have, and I came to, so to speak, standing a few yards away from the rock where I'd seen both Alex and Anna. Neither of them were there, but as I turned, shaking my head at my loss of emotional control, Alex walked out of a copse of bedraggled alders with a shy smile on his face. Once again, like a drug, his presence lifted me into a kind of cheer that was almost instantaneous. I wondered about that, but found myself returning his smile. "Hey," I said, "I guess I needed to talk to you." Looking around, I took in the scene for the third time. It was still pretty. The mountains don't change much. "What about?" He was reasonably open, his gaze even and natural. "Well, it's sort of a long story. Walk with me to my grand's?" I asked.
"Why?"
he asked, then raised a hand in apology. "Sorry, I mean, why your gran?" "I thought we might have tea, and I can ask you a few questions about what you've seen out here while running. You have been shifting, right?" I looked at him for confirmation. The musk of his other shape still clung to him. If he lied, I would know it. He awarded me the barest of shrugs.
"It's a nice place."
"Yeah, mostly I'm running free out here." He cut his eyes at the breadth of the forest.
"What do you want to know?"
I started walking toward town in hopes he would follow. He did. We fell into a sort of amble down the path, each step easy as the gentle slope took us lower on the winding hillside. There were more birds protesting our movement than I could imagine. The usual suspects were crying at us, jays, blackbirds, and their rowdy friends. But even a dove flapped its wings indignantly at us as we passed by, the chittering call of its distress adding to the general mayhem. It seemed that the scent of a shifter was unwelcome in this neck of the woods. "I met a vampire," I began.
That put a hitch in his giddy-up.
He faltered, then caught himself after turning to me in surprise.
"You mean another one?"
"Other than Wolfric?" "Yeah, this one's a pureblood. He scared a girl in town, and I had to hang around to have a chat with him." I could feel the slow burn of exhaustion cresting on me like a wave. I yawned, thought about my bed, and went on. "Says he's in town because he lost his hunting rights, and that he's the last of his clan. Ever heard of something like that?" I carefully avoided asking Alex if he'd seen the vampire during his travels. I'd let Gran do the serious questioning. Alex thought about it. I could tell he'd covered some serious ground, because sifting his memories of the woods took a few seconds.
"I've seen signs, but nothing in person. I know there are undead here."
He frowned, a delicate pull at the fine skin of his brow.
"They aren't hunting, if that's what you're wondering. I would smell it,"
Alex said, confirming my suspicions about some of his abilities as a shifter. "Don't you smell the undead, too?" I asked. If Alex had such a good sniffer, I didn't know how he could avoid smelling something that hadn't drawn a true breath for 4 centuries.
There is more of a hole in things than a scent. Wherever they go, there's a... It's like things are cleansed by cold, and there's this low level of mustiness. They are more nothing than something, unless it's a ghoul. I can smell them a mile away, he said, grinning. Ghouls smelled like a dumpster fire behind a seafood restaurant. They were gross. I offed a ghoul last year. I seriously considered letting it eat me just so I wouldn't have to smell the damned thing. It had some words left, too. Kept growling about me paying for my pizza and not leaving a tip. Somewhere east of here is a pizza shop missing a really pissed off delivery driver, I said, but my smile wilted. The guy had been human once, and now he was a place of ashes in the moss behind my house. I hoped his spirit was at rest.
Why do you want me to answer the same stuff at your grand's? Is she a witch too?
Alex wasn't dumb, just forlorn and adorable. Yes, and she's better at detecting lies, I said simply. It kept me honest through high school. I smiled to take some sting from the planned interrogation.
What do you think I might lie about?
His eyes were calculating, but he still managed to seem a little bit sleepy. Whether or not you know a 400-year-old vampire who came to town for some terrible reason. Oh, and who killed Edward. And the girl one town over. Also, I'd kind of like to know what Anna's long game is with Amelia. I want my boyfriend to be happy, and with your sister dangling her daughter like bait, it's hard for him to find peace. Color flushed my cheeks at that admission. Okay, I got mad again. Sorry, it's that Anna is so smug all the time.
That's a lot of info. I can tell you what I know, but Anna is going to be a problem, he admitted.
Why? Problem was such a vague, ugly term. It could mean almost anything, none of which was good, unless it was referring to having three waffles and two hands, but that's why we stack them. See? I solve problems.
She's just... Anna. She never tells anyone stuff. She likes being on her own, and even though she calls us a pack, it's more like her doing whatever she wants and me sort of tagging along. Always been like that, he said, and there was a wealth of frustration in his muted tone.
Fair enough. What do you want, Alex? I asked. The silence was almost total. I could hear him breathing next to me as our shoes thumped along on the dry path. After a period of several minutes, I prompted him with the same question again.
I don't know, he said, his voice lost in wonder. No one ever cared enough to ask.
The bitterness of that statement was crushing. I thought about the casual way I assume my family or friends will be around, asking me or telling me about what is happening in my life. I cooled at the possibility of being alone and realized some of what Alex must feel. For about the millionth time, I missed Wolfric, felt a pang for Gus, and wondered if I should call my folks in New Mexico. The total time of this emotional feel coaster was less than a second. Then I thought of Gran, brightened, and took Alex's hand in mine. You might not even know what you know, but I would like you to talk to Gran. Someone died, Alex. We can't have that on our lands, and it's just wrong. You understand? I shook his arm lightly via our linked hands, noticing that his fingers made mine feel like tinned sausages. I can't stand a man with better hands than mine, and don't get me started on his eyelashes. They curved to the sky, and each silky lash made me twitch a little with jealousy. He grinned, and this time it was free of any tension.
Okay, Carly, let's go meet your gran and we can talk. But I have to tell you, I don't like tea.
I nodded gravely. Who knew what to expect from the palate of a shifter? His sister ate like a human garbage disposal. I guess someone in the family deserved a discerning set of taste buds. So I smiled, pointed toward Gran's, and wondered why there were so many unknown things happening in my town. I sensed I would not wonder for long. Chapter 15. A Dish of Cream. Alex regarded Gran's house with the wariness of, well, a cat.
I could tell his reaction was due to the truth that other people's homes are exotic. The house itself might be plain to a fault, but the sense and setting and aura of every home is different. That's why vampires have such trouble getting in to attack a victim when they're at home. The energy that accrues over time is a kind of force field that renders the powers of the undead inert. For every casserole your mom burned, or stain on the carpet, or picture on the wall, there is a psychic imprint that makes your house into a fortress of positive energy. I personally find the whole concept a bit touchy-feely, but then again, I'm a girl raised in the mountains. I like things that make sense. Just because I happen to be a witch doesn't mean I don't understand that which I can't see. I know the unseen world just fine. I simply prefer my magic a bit more robust. The tenuous nature of threshold power can't be measured. So for me, it's a wild card. In my line of work, a bad hand can get you killed. I like aces, and my charm bracelet and spells are chock full of them. While I cast my aspersions on nebulous magic, Gran busied herself with introductions and bustled us to the kitchen table, where the interrogation would take place. There was no glaring light bulb at the end of a grimy cord. Her wagon wheel chandelier had the quiet dignity of something that had survived the 1970s without being altered due to changing tastes. As Gran poured tea for all of us, Alex hesitated, looking to me sheepishly. "What can I get you?" I asked with a smile in my voice. My simple inquiry nearly made him flinch, and I resolved that if nothing else, Alex would feel welcome here.
"May I have cream in my tea?"
he asked, a small smile on his features. Gran pointed to a sturdy red cream pitcher that had drops of condensation on the outside.
"I figured you might like that. Heavy cream from the local dairy, Alex. Shall I pour it for you?"
At his nod of assent, Gran dribbled the decadent liquid into the steaming cup, sending blossoms of color whirling about like a tiny tempest. The aroma was so lush I felt my mouth water. That was one happy cow. To our utter shock, Alex spoke first. His mannerisms were young, but he was technically an adult. I adjusted my opinion of him on the fly and listened.
"I wasn't entirely honest with you, back there on the trail, Carly."
At my expression of surprise, he added,
"I've seen evidence from lots of vampires. I meant to find out where they were coming from, but Anna's been so angry." That made two of us. I snorted, saw Gran frown, and pasted a smile on my face.
"Why is she angry?"
"She thinks that her daughter isn't going to be like us."
Short and sweet. Gran leaned toward Alex and asked,
"What are you like, Alex? You mean your supernatural nature?"
He nodded, sipping his tea.
"She thinks that Amelia's different, and it's making her nervous. When we were growing up, there were ways for us to get by. We've been on our own for a long time."
I knew that tone. This was a young man with no memory of a home to recall, and it showed on the planes of his face.
"Was your mother a shifter, or your father?"
Gran asked gently.
"My father. My mother was something different. My father told me that she came to him looking for something, and after we were born, she left. Then, one day, he left too, and Anna and I had to decide if we wanted to live or die."
He gifted us a brittle smile.
"Obviously, we chose to live."
Gran sat back as a silence stretched into awkwardness. Then she leaned toward Alex and picked up his hand, her touch light as a breath. To my shock, she sniffed him like a chef investigating an ongoing pan of sauce. Alex drew back his hand in alarm, but Gran let go without incident, and we both sat watching her dredge through memories she'd collected during decades of advanced witchcraft.
"Tell me," Gran said after a long moment, "have you ever been told of your mother's true nature?"
Alex's eyes went round, and something hungry and hopeful glittered in them. This was clearly something he wanted to know, and it was close at hand.
"No."
His whisper was almost inaudible. I felt his burning need and looked expectantly at Gran.
Carly, have you not mentioned that your relationship with Anna is, shall we say, strained?
Her prim analysis was far more mannerly than any term I would have selected, but I nodded while repressing an unladylike snort.
That's one way of putting it. If her brother hadn't been present, I would have run out of curses to describe my feelings for Anna.
I tidied my thoughts and clarified with a simple, "Yes, it is." She drummed her fingers on the solid kitchen table, examining me with a scholarly flair. With a glance toward Alex, she said,
"When you're around Alex, do you feel somewhat invigorated, perhaps even the smallest bit intrigued by his obvious charms? You really are a lovely young man."
This last was delivered in conspiratorial aside. Alex blushed, but smiled after I leveled a cool gaze at him and opened my senses to their fullest potential. There. It was a vibration, distant and sweet, almost, but not quite, a song. An undercurrent of delicious intrigue filtered through my mind, until I had to restrain myself from looking to see if he had scales. So powerful was the notion that he was a siren on the rocks, calling to doomed sailors under a spell. I twitched my head, clearing the effect in an instant, as my witch mark reasserted its dominion over the sensory intake of my body.
"Your mother was..."
I started to say, then stopped after consideration. "No, let me correct myself." Gran smiled, and I knew I was on the right path. Alex merely looked bewildered.
"Your mother was a half-blood, but she was no vampire. Correct so far, Gran?"
"Indeed." Gran's smile was bright. She loved watching my skills expand like a fractal. I began again, this time in a more patient tone, given the nature of the proclamation. "Alex, the reason I, disagree with your sister is because you are one-quarter incubus. Your mother was half-succubus, probably quite powerful, and much like magnets, similar polarities of power drawn from the ever-after will cause a natural repulsion between certain beings."
"I'm... what?"
Alex asked. I'd lost him with the magnet analogy, or maybe at the very start.
"Your mother was not human, nor was your father, dear,"
Gran began to explain, taking the mantle of teacher from me as I sighed in relief. "You are actually a child of three worlds. Perhaps that's why you've never really felt like you belong anywhere. Do you feel adrift, son?" Tears brimmed in Alex's liquid brown eyes as his shoulders sagged in a worldless admission of Gran's astute observation.
"Adrift."
He let his chin drop in agreement, then muttered,
"Yes, that's how it's been since we were little."
His voice ended in a rasp.
I felt like hugging the guy. Whatever he was replaying in his mind was one long movie of troubles.
I know the occasional touch of loneliness, but it's an inconvenience at most. For Alex, I knew his life had been desolate, and seeing him rediscover those lost moments was hard to watch. He looked at his hands as if seeing them for the first time.
"What am I? Who am I?"
It was plaintive and bitter.
"Your mother was half immortal and a succubus. She thrived on the lust and dreams of others, although I cannot say if she was a killer. Most succubae are merely opportunistic. They are more like dilettantes who move about, never staying in one place as they feed and flee, and carried by the tides of their own desires," Gran said, her voice soft with sympathy.
"You're a person, Alex. You just have something beyond the norm, or even that unusual part of you that lets you run free at times," I said, looking into his face to offer him an anchor during the storm of his own history. "Have you ever harmed anyone?" His eyes rounded in shock.
"No. Why?"
I shrugged. "Well, then your questions as to what and who you are have been answered. You appear to be Alex,
who doesn't hurt people, had a lonely childhood, and now finds himself at a crossroads of sorts. At least, that's what I see when I look at you. He drew several calming breaths, finally looking around the kitchen as his mind began to process his newfound knowledge.
It's going to take a while to understand all of this.
He put his slender hands flat on the table, then squared his shoulders. The effect of readiness was undeniable. He addressed Gran.
You want to know what's going on in your lands, correct?
Gran simply nodded. I stayed quiet. Alex smiled with a warmth that had been missing only moments earlier.
Before we go any further, tell me something. There aren't any sharks around here, right?
I laughed out loud at his comical question. No, not for millions of years anyway. Why? He held his hands up, grinning impudently.
Thought so. Just figured I'd ask. See, you were wondering if there were any vampires around, and I can tell you that there are. I run the woods a lot. Anna never really embraced her feline side. Not like me. I cover a ton of ground. And I haven't just seen one or two vampires. I've seen a dozen. At least.
Silence fell between us. That was a considerable amount of vampires. Hell, that was a lot of vampires for Las Vegas, let alone halfway. Like I said, they rarely play well with others. Their territorial nature made this influx even weirder, since vamps tended to find some nice, quiet corner of the globe to exploit and settle down. So a dozen vampires. Here. I looked to Gran, whose lips were pressed together in a flat line of concern. That alone was reason enough to worry me, if not for the astonishing amount of vampires suddenly running around our little corner of the mountains.
Yeah, that was unusual to me, too. I've seen a clan meet once, about 3 years ago. They were all relatively young. Some of them were less than 30 years old, in fact. It was in New Jersey, and they nearly tore the town apart after one night of their little reunion. But here, I've seen almost no sign of them being... I don't know, Alex said, then faltered.
Acting like typical young vampires? Running around and eating people and posing in good lighting for selfies with their idiotic friends? I asked. Younger vamps, unlike other undead, embraced social media. They were basically frustrated stage actors with a thirst for human blood and their parents' approval. Blood, they could get. Acceptance was hard to come by. So they were always sort of hangry, like toddlers before snack time. Unlike kids, they had the ability to tear people apart if given the chance, and they were never apologetic or snuggly. So, yeah, vampires were unwelcome, except for Wolfric. And even he was a half-blood of rare quality. I'd heard of less than 5 half-bloods who had integrated into society at all, and then, only after some highly unusual circumstances were at play. Guarding a toxic spring for 1,000 years qualified as unusual, and then some. So if anything, Wolfric was a good example of what could grow from the twist of separation. Exile made humans out of monsters, proving my theory that the need for socializing extended even into the ranks of the undead. Alex waved a hand vaguely.
I guess... I haven't seen any evidence of them. Isn't that sort of odd? I mean, at what point in their collective vampire lives did they all develop this steely sense of self-control? Aren't there plenty of people around here who could go missing and not be found for long enough to let the killer escape?
He had a point. Gran lifted her chin in thought, then gestured broadly at the north end of town.
Do you know what keeps villains in line?
She smiled at me, and I knew I was in the midst of some teachable moment. But I had the drop on her this time. I knew the answer. A meaner villain, I smirked in victory. Gran let her smile deepen, and I noticed that there was concern underneath her amusement. Okay, so we were getting to the core of the problem.
And since these are, after all, vampires... We can make some simple deductions, since they're such predictable creatures. You said this Philip is at least 3 to 4 centuries old?
I nodded, and Gran continued.
That means we're dealing with something older, more powerful, and less human.
She turned to Alex with an air of apology.
I do hope this isn't remedial for you, but the nature of undead beings is well known to us witches. Are you aware of the changes that vampires go through as they season?
Season? That sounds tame, but no, I only know about the young ones, Alex explained.
Gran accepted that and began her discourse on the gross aspects of aging undead.
Well, as you may suspect, a vampire does not freeze in time just because they are afflicted with the curse of eternal hunger. Their bodies continue to morph, albeit slowly, but it is their minds that become truly alien, given enough time to do so. Think of them as a well filled with humanity. Over time, the well begins to run dry, and that amorality begins to express itself in ever more creative ways. By the end of, say, 1,000 years, she cuts her eyes at me in apology, most vampires are completely incomprehensible to all people, save witches, sorcerers, and the odd, crazed necromancer who opts to do business with them. She shuddered delicately at that. Necromancers were nasty business. Simply brushing against their interests was likely to stain your soul for eternity, a fact that many of them disregarded cheerfully in their eternal pursuit of the dark arts. Gran sipped her tea delicately, then held out a hand, fingers extended. Think of these vampires as ancient trees. They begin to twist over time, until they are unrecognizable. Oh, to be sure, one might examine them closely and be able to state that they were once a tree, but that would necessitate getting close enough to do such a thing. And believe me, Alex, nobody of sound mind wants to be in that proximity to a being of such malignant energy.
I see, Alex said slowly.
So there is something on your land that is keeping other vampires in fear, which means it should be easy to see, right? Not true. The wicked and evil are almost always expert liars. They are capable of anything in the name of their lust. So it makes sense that this being, if there is indeed only one, could be almost anyone or anything.
She held up one long finger, then wagged it significantly.
But we would be fools not to think that the place to begin is with the ringmaster from that circus. He is almost certainly not human, and I think that underneath his feet we'll find clues about the nature of what is happening on our lands.
Gran, you said that their show was a distraction. Wouldn't vampires want to divert our attention away from them harvesting people? I mean, there aren't exactly tons of dead people being found up and down the chain of legs, I said. To our knowledge, there were even less deaths than usual.
True. But that only means that whatever these vampires are doing, it isn't simply looking for prey, Gran said.
That dinged a memory. The blood gift that Philip spoke about. What if it isn't blood or the right to hunt? I asked.
That's the question, isn't it? That term implies something religious, perhaps even sacred. And that is why I need some assistance from you, Carly, Gran said, turning to me.
Anything, Gran. What is it? I asked.
If she told me to run through traffic blindfolded, I'd have a shirt over my head and feet on the pavement in 5 seconds.
She smiled, then took my hand and squeezed it in the precursor to a dismissal. I was being sent on an errand.
Go find Wulfric. We need his help in this matter, and I think that the two of you will be much safer together for the next few days, Gran said.
I flinched. Did she think I couldn't take care of myself?
Before I could reply, she held up a hand, and I fell back, not mollified, but wanting an explanation for her assumption of my weakness. Then she said something that made me wonder if she could read my thoughts all day, every day, and I was once again a child in the midst of a reprimand. I really do need to grow into my power. Gran's face transformed into a melange of patient worry.
The protection is not for you, dear. How long do you think competing vampires will tolerate an outside rival while they're vying for this mysterious prize? The answer is, not long. You must find him, so that we may take care of each other. The shield I must provide isn't for you, but for Wolfric.
Chapter 16. Body Spray and Babes. Alex left me outside Gran's. He was off to do, well, whatever it is that shifters do when they aren't making nice with a pair of witches over tea, but not before I extracted a promise of him visiting the diner for breakfast. As I walked to my house, there was a small-town convergence of worlds in which Tammy, Sincotti, and Tristan, the neighborhood kid, collided at my doorstep. Tammy was magnificent in her delivery uniform, the truck idling two doors up in a driveway in order to facilitate her slow saunter to my house, with a package tucked under one bare arm. Of course, her makeup was pageant-ready, as was her hair. Her pretty face lit in a smile at the sight of me, and I lifted an arm in greeting, just as a roaring engine came to life not 10 feet away. We both jumped, but for different reasons. Tammy was simply startled, but my nerves were jangled raw by the events of the previous days. We turned as one, searing looks of irritation directed at the source of the noise, and the third part of our small-town convergence leaned out of a roaring Camaro and yelled, "Sup, Carly? Tammy? Like it? Just got it today!" It was Tristan, the 18-year-old male half of two neighborhood kids who had victimized me for money and clothes over the past 3 years. To clarify, they do so at my invitation, since both of them, that would include Tristan's sister, Julia, have given me rides when I need to leave halfway proper for shopping. Gran isn't always in the mood to tromp through stores 40 miles away, and I have a reputation for turning cars into glorified paperweights. I'm a good driver, but there's a kind of universal balancing act that works against me when I'm behind the wheel of a car. After 3 cars and 3 separate but hilariously weird accidents, I decided that maybe it was best to avoid driving anything more risky than a bicycle. Tristan and Julia swept in upon the coattails of my terrible luck and offered to act as my personal chauffeurs, for a price. Julia liked clothes, Tristan, cash. Both of them were cold-blooded hustlers and maddeningly cheerful about it to boot. I looked at the growling beast of a car that Tristan was sitting in and felt my eyes flutter upward in the kind of role that I reserved for middle-aged men on their first motorcycle. He killed the engine and posed, one arm out of the window in his best bad boy impersonation, which didn't really work, considering his clear braces appeared to have some sort of green vegetable caught in them. When Tammy began to open her mouth to helpfully point out this offense, I tweaked her arm and winked. She smirked, then directed a brilliant smile at the kid, bathing him in the megawatt look of an actual living, breathing woman. A woman with boobs, I might add, and nice ones that she brought out to play on a regular basis. "Nice ride. You sure you're ready for that much horsepower?" Tammy drawled, leaning into the window and offering him a peek at 3 buttons worth of prime real estate. Her cleavage really was quite impressive, and the effect on Tristan was something like being shot with a rhino dart. His eyes went round, glazed over, and then cleared in a roiling instant that summed up every hormonal tug he'd been subjected to since puberty.
I'm gonna be careful, he finished, his voice drifting up as he addressed Tammy.
That's right. You take care of that beauty, okay? Tammy said, her voice light and playful. Tristan blushed to the hairline, fired the engine up, and backed out with the care of a man transporting unsecured dynamite. As he pulled away, she put her manicured hands on her hips and smiled before waving slowly at him. I sincerely hoped he didn't crash from watching her, then stifled a laugh that was half hysterical. I really was beyond tired, both physically and mentally. "Men don't understand hormones at all,"
He uses body spray like he's trying to kill horseflies.
Phew!
Tammy clicked her tongue thoughtfully and smiled. He's had an eye for you since he was 15.
What?
I didn't doubt Tammy. This was, after all, her era of expertise, but still, I'm usually a little more observant.
Oh, yeah. I've seen him watch you walk to the diner. Not like a stalker, just interested. He's a guy. You're pretty. It was inevitable.
Tammy pronounced this with an air of conviction. I've known him since he was born. I babysat him, I protested, feeling a little off at the knowledge that Tristan was now eyeing me in that way. Where had the time gone? She shrugged. Doesn't matter now. He's old enough to know the difference. Between what? I asked, confused. She pointed at me, her smile wicked. Between what he thinks he can have. Her finger curled, then she tapped herself between two mounds of cresting cleavage. And what he can't. I laughed, snorted, and then wiped my nose in a most ladylike fashion.
I saw you looking at his car. Don't you mean what he can't have yet?
Still grinning, she dropped a small package in my hands, shot me her traditional double-barreled finger guns, and sashayed back to her delivery truck. I hefted the little package and resolved that someday I'd like 1/10 of the confidence Tammy carried around with her, then unlocked my door and stepped into the sanctum of my home. I needed Gus and sleep and a bath. Gus announced himself with a running headbutt, and I exhaled contentedly as I went to my bedroom. Sleep first, clean up later. The moon was going to rise tonight. My witch mark was inert on my scalp. But I knew that state of quiescence would fade with the lifting of a fat crescent moon. Slipping under my covers, Gus took his position along my leg, a rumbling length of friendly warmth. I closed my eyes, felt the house around me like a warm glove, and slept. Chapter 17 Battle Cry. I woke with a luxurious stretch after Gus playfully tapped me on the cheek. He was in fine fettle, purring at me in the darkness while perched on the edge of my pillow. Actually, he sort of covered the pillow, but draped across it to tap my face with an indolent paw. Cats really understand the value of stagecraft. He wanted me to wake up for any incoming spells, but he was too proud to admit that he was hungry. It's that kind of commitment to saving face that makes me think cats are the incarnation of samurai warriors, but with a penchant for canned tuna. Through the trickle of moonlight, his profile was noble. Cats really achieve that whole regal thing without too much effort, although a couple years ago I accidentally torched his whiskers in a scrying spell that went horribly awry. It took him a month to forgive me, or at least until his whiskers were close to their former splendor. While his whiskers regrew, he had the ignoble look of a tattered stuffed animal. I kept that thought to myself, lest he swap me again, but a stifled chuckle that made him cut his eyes at me suspiciously. I made a note to recheck him for psychic abilities, schooled my face into a blank mask, and disentangled from the toasty covers. It was time to see what had come through the mail slot. There could be no other primary reason for Gus waking me, despite his moderate hunger pangs. I padded downstairs to the foyer and let my eyes adjust, scanning the floor for the envelope. There was no envelope. There was no tidy, hand-crafted shape announcing some wholly reasonable request for the mending of a broken heart, or a location spell, or any of the other helpful magic I perform. There was only a thing, flat and dark and smelling of musk. I told Gus to stay back, but it was unnecessary. He hissed at the object, and I flipped the light on, needing to see exactly what had been dropped into my home. It was a hat, or rather, it had been a hat at some point. It was fabric, white at one time, but now grimy beyond belief and stiff with dirt and age. The metallic tang of blood hung over the rag, and I cautiously reached out with one finger and flipped the rigid oval over.
At some point, there had been a harlequin pattern of red and white on the fabric. It looked like the lining of a vintage hat, the kind you might see placed at a jaunty angle on a gentleman walking the streets of Brooklyn over a century earlier. The writing was in blood, just as before. This time, it was a different hand, but the words were just as hideous. "Don't let any more be taken. Please." My heart clenched at the smell and the sentiment, all wrapped together in a call for action that spoke to my duty as a witch in a way that I felt like a physical blow. My breath came in short, hard gasps, and I had to close my eyes to brace myself against anger. This plea was evidence that people were being harmed on my watch. I would not stand for it, and I couldn't imagine what reaction Gran might have when she saw the note, if that's what you could call something so barbarous. "Gus, I'd better take this to Gran, now." He uttered a single "meow" of agreement, flicked his ears in the direction of the blood-stained plea, and decamped to wait by the window. Having an understanding, if judgmental cat, is one of the benefits that witchcraft can bring. It's also one of the drawbacks if said cat weighs more than a toddler. I patted Gus, feeling the reassuring bulk of his feline flank. Something ineffable passed through my witch mark, and I was compelled to take a long look at my home before walking toward Gran's a few minutes later. My boots bumped along the sidewalk in a rhythm that calmed me with each step. I'd made this journey countless times, for reasons from a simple visit to life and death issues of a magical bent. This fell closer to the latter, I thought, and a shudder passed up the small of my back, ending somewhere near my soul. Gran answered the door in her nightgown, without turning on the porch light. She knew it was me, and thus felt no need to go through the trappings of a surprise visit. "What is it, dear?" she asked as I stepped inside. I wordlessly handed her the note, watching with interest as she turned the oval over in her long hands. She didn't move or speak for several minutes, just moved the fabric to and fro in the dim light of the oven light in her kitchen. Her feet made small shushing sounds as she moved about to change the angle of the light. Silently, she put the note in a dish on her counter, as if loath to let the blood touch anything of her life. I understood. Between the blood and the words, it was an unholy thing. With a nod, she reached a decision and moved briskly toward her bedroom. "Let me dress. We're going for a walk." "Where to?" I asked. For a moment, I thought she hadn't heard me, but then her voice drifted back from the darkened hallway. "To see an old friend." There was a pause, then she came into view, pulling a thick plaid shirt over her nightgown. She's added jeans, too, and a walking stick that gave her the decided air of a lumberjack wizard. She cocked her head at me and smiled. "And I think we'll discuss a little family history on the way, too." The night sky was broken with the light of stars alone, so we began our walk at a modest pace, arm in arm. Gran's pretty spry, but I sensed that she was using this trip to discuss something of importance, so I savored the clean air and took solace in the companionable pressure of her grip. I was on the cusp of morose thoughts about her age when she made a small noise of amusement. "You needn't worry about me shuffling off to the ever after, Carly." At my small gasp, Gran added, "Your silence is a bit transparent. I'm long for this life. Do you know that witches live into their second century and beyond?" Her tone was light and informative. "I'd heard, but..." "Really? Why?" I was stunned. I suspected this would be the first of many such surprises tonight. "It's time, Carly." The way she said it was a pronouncement, not mere words. "Time for what, Gran?" I'd stopped, dragged to stillness by the weight of her words. She smiled at me in the dim light. Emotion that I felt more than saw. "You've grown, as a woman and a witch. I saw such wonderful things in you, even when you were a girl. Carly, you've made me proud to be your teacher, and my heart is filled to bursting with your purity of spirit. but it's time for you to unlock the next chapter in your journey. She pulled me lightly by one hand, dispelling the air of shock that clung to me like a cloud. Okay, Gran. I love you. I'm proud to be your granddaughter, but do you think I need to take on something else? I will, you know. I added this last bit in a hurry, not wanting to seem ungracious. I do. You've reached a natural point where what lies around the bend of the river is in front of you. The time for new challenges is now, not later, and we begin tonight with some history, Gran said as we walked. Where are we going? The edge of town wasn't far away, and I wondered about our general safety at night without a light source. As far as protection, well, that was the least of my concerns. To the upper graveyard. She spoke this without a hint of care. I'd lived in Halfway all my life, and I only knew of one cemetery. I felt a twinge of the unknown, but it faded because of the woman I stood next to. All would be revealed, I knew, so I merely waited as long as I could stand it. Upper? It was one word, but it meant many things. It revealed my uncertainty at finding that there were aspects of Halfway I didn't know. For a hometown girl, that came as a cool touch at the back of my neck, especially given my line of work. It's better if you see for yourself. My description is biased. Personally, I think it's one of the most beautiful places in Halfway, Gran said reverently. You also think the pizza parlor is charming, I teased. She snorted, delicately. Don't be cheeky. I said I like the brick oven. The fake plastic grapevines are too kitschy for my palate, but the stonework is rather old world, she clarified. Fair enough, I do like the oven. I like what comes out of the oven even more, I admitted, noting that it was only a couple hours until my usual snack raid. I sent a sternly worded warning to my stomach and hoped that it wouldn't rumble in the sacred ground of the graveyard. I was giving myself even odds. I don't do hunger well. It's one of my charms. Gran let quiet settle about us, and our smiles faded in that place between comfort and curiosity. I knew she would speak when ready, and I honestly had no idea what was going to be said. For the moment, I let the night keep my counsel. We passed a sort of threshold where the interior of the town became indistinct. Growing up in Halfway, there were three known places. You were in town or out of town, and then, if you were lucky, you were in the park. That kind of definite existence is comforting, just like the solid grip Gran had on my arm when our feet began to crunch on the small stones of a cut-through that led to the left side of our town cemetery. I looked at the terraces, four in all, ascending up the hillside, and each one covered in grave markers and sporadic trees. Low sheets of luminous fog drifted lazily near the ground, and somewhere an owl lofted a mournful hoot into the night air. If not for the distant blur of a lonely streetlight, we could have been anywhere in time. Gran stopped and began to speak. Your power is like the terraces of this graveyard. It is founded on something sacred, just like mine, and on the witches of our family who stretched behind us into the distant shadows of a lineage that even I do not fully understand, Gran said in a confessional tone. Your grimoire is filling with spells. You've always been a great student, Carly, but your power now exceeds your ability to translate those spells into mere words. You need alternative outlets to learn from, as well as places where you can turn to gather information. It is time that you understood how to speak to the dead. The who? I asked, stunned. I'd always thought of the dead as being unreachable, unless they were in torment. Then, more often than not, they reached out to the living, and the results were horrible. There is no pain like that of a ghost in limbo. It's eternal, unending, and affixed to a memory that can often drive you mad with agony, if you as much as brush up against it. I'd been trained by Gran to avoid ghosts, and now she was telling me that they were about to become a resource. I stayed quiet to let her instruct me. It was the right thing to do in that manicured graveyard filled with unquiet voices. Witches are not precluded from talking to the dead, especially if that person is willing. There's a difference between wailing because of pain and speaking to the living out of a desire to help. The dead see things, and if they're good people, then they pass that information on to us, Gran said. Us? I asked. Did she mean just our family? Witches of goodness and light. The dead can be our eyes and ears, Carly. They miss very little during their travels through the places between. She looked up the hill to the highest terrace, a place that was nearly obscured by the low fog. Don't think of the dead as limited by their graves. That only applies to victims of trauma. It's the singular reason for their insanity and pain, a sort of cabin fever brought on by their imprisonment. A sad noise drifted from her lips, and I knew she thought of someone specific. Do you know any ghosts like that, Gran? I asked. It seemed likely she did. She nodded slightly, and the stars glistened in her eyes. I did, but they are at rest now. The passing was difficult. Uninvited tears left her cheeks with a single track on each. She wiped them away with an irritated wave and drew a steadying breath. For my grandmother to verge on the loss of her composure was a rarity. I leaned toward her to listen even harder. My spirit sensed the truth behind her sadness. Gran took a decisive step up the central path. To either side of us, a garden of loss and remembrance peeled away into the fog, each stone the declaration of someone's love. Flowers, wreaths, and other clues about recent visitors dotted the rows, some tattered by sun and rain, others so fresh the blooms were proudly unbowed. It was haunting and elegant, and I found a smile tug at my lips at the thought of loving so deeply that not even death could stop it. We ascended the path gradually, pausing every few steps so Gran could both orient and rest. She was hale, but the walk had already been quite long. I know of spirits who have spoken to a family of witches for more than 500 years, Gran revealed. At my gasp, she nodded to recognize the enormity of that timeline. If the relationship is mutual, then spirits may find no need to close the circuit between our worlds. Remember, Carly, the difference between a necromancer and a witch is consent. A good witch honors the covenant between life and death, and will not abuse those who cannot defend themselves from the reaches of foul magic. I trust you, as you were an extension of myself, but the temptations of necromancy are strong. I would be remiss if I didn't armor you against all contingencies for when you conduct ever more complex and dangerous witchcraft. Do you understand?
I think so. I mean, yes, it's a lot to take in, I admitted. I'm a good witch, but I know when I'm faced with something big, like now. Who will we speak to, Gran? My curiosity bubbled over, and she smiled at me patiently. We arrived at the cusp of the fourth and narrowest tier, crowded with trees and verging into a less cultured state. The hill's nearest town blotted more stars to create a darkness that became a physical thing. Gran's voice seemed muffled in the night. Follow me, Carly, and open your sight. Your step will be true. I cleared my mind and let my power surge outward in a low wave. The land around me opened up to my gentle inquiry, and the results took my breath away. We stood in a mottled lawn of lights, vari colored, and pulsing gently like waves in a mill pond. Occasional bursts of starlight flew to and fro like a conversation between angels. Are the spirits talking to each other? My voice was a reverent whisper. They are, Gran chuckled. And the things they say, so bawdy. Her laughter was a tonic to my nerves, and I found the idea of ghosts being lewd to be nothing short of hilarious. And hopeful. Ah, there's the gate now. She pointed vaguely at a section of thick blackberry bushes,
their spindles hanging down from an impenetrable mist.
Gate? There?
I goggled. Even in the dark, the bushes looked like a hedgehog made of thorns. It was a single